Welcome to the Gain Momentum podcast, focusing on timeless lessons from senior leaders in hospitality, food service, travel, and technology. Today, we have our co-host here, Michael Goldrich. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And our very special guest, Anthony Melchiori, president of RJO Hospitality. He's a TV host for multiple shows, including the latest one coming out, Hotel All-Stars, and he's an author with his latest book, Show Up, talking about lessons for hospitality and pretty much any job that you could possibly want. It's a very important book with timeless lessons itself. Anthony, how are you?
Well, thank you very much for that kind introduction. I'm doing well. Michael, how are you? Adam, how are you?
Fantastic.
All good.
So, Adam, you mentioned the book. In the book, what is the one thing? What was the one thing you took away from it?
Well, we could get into your life lessons. I do think that one thing that people maybe skip over about your background is that you're from the military. You're from the Air Force. Is that correct?
Yeah. I was 5 years, and I was on some great projects. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I'm obviously a big believer in the discipline that comes out of the military and the Air Force. But the one lesson that I took away from your book, of course, is the importance of consistency. Consistency in your life, in your character, in what you promise to deliver and what you actually deliver. And I think that stands for any industry.
Well, thank you. You know, I was last night, we have a once a month card game, $30 buy-in tournament. And my friend who has one of the biggest real estate law companies in the country, or actually in the city, I should say, and the game started at 7:30, and I go, why are you late? And he goes, because I had to work out. I go, yeah, but today's the game. Why don't you just work out in the morning or work out tomorrow? And he goes, no. I get up, I go to work, I come home at this time, I eat, and I work out. And then if I have some time, I'll do things. And I was like, you never break that? He goes, I never break that. He's really freaking consistent. And it works for him.
I guess the term there would be consistency compounds. Yeah. Which is to say, consistency over 1 week, it is what it is, but consistency over a decade, you can accomplish incredible things.
It's like compounded interest.
Exactly.
But I think that there also needs to be flexibility. So like, take your impression of that. He's consistent, but he also need to be flexible, because now he's saying, you know, by being late, he give off, it's a little bit disrespectful. If everyone else is on time, it's, you know, so... I think they're.
Yeah, I don't think anybody took it that way, but it was more that the time he brought in, it was kind of late in the game and we beat him. But anyway, but yeah, consistency, flexibility, my favorite words, durability. We all get kicked. We all get knocked down. Matter of fact, the name of the book was going to be called Get Your Head Out of Your Ass, because we all get to that point where we can't see because our head's up our butt. And my wife said, that's not allowed. So we went with Show Up, which is kind of really my thing. A lot of my friends call me and say, you know, I have my son, he's 18, 19, 20, and he's lost or whatever. And when I get him on the phone, and then first of all, they have to call me because I won't call them. If they call me, I'll take the phone call from their child. And I say to them, walk out the door, put your pants on, walk out the door and do something. Go to the store, go to the gym. Go meet a friend, go walk on a beach, but move, just move. And too many people are waiting. They're sending their emails after college or after high school, sending their resume. Nobody's looking for me because no one is looking for you. You know, and I think that there's a fallacy in this world that if you do, you know, a little bit, you do a little video, you do this or you do that, people are going to notice you. And one of the things I say to them is nobody cares. Nobody cares. We all got our own problems. We all got our own challenges. We all got our own bills and our own things that we have to solve. And if we can help you that doesn't interfere with our track, we're going to help you. And people don't realize that. I help a lot of people. I try to mentor as many people as possible. But we have to stay on track. And a lot of young people, a lot of people, period, don't understand that.
Well, you know, it's something that you can learn. And you know, the book Show Up does talk about that in several places. So I'm wondering if you could draw on your own experience working literally in the fields of hospitality from the ground up, the front desk and seeing back of house. How did you learn this principle about getting out there and really having that durability?
I had a colonel in the military one day said to me, Colonel Hallam, she's like Colonel Jessup from A Few Good Men. I was attached to an army base in Honduras for 6 months because I took the officer training school test, which is a commission test, and I needed to extend my, I was 4 years and I needed to extend until the test come back to see if I passed the test. Long story short, he sends me to Honduras. My colonel, Kenning, sent me to Honduras, which is Solocon Air Base, and I meet an army colonel named Colonel Hallams. And Colonel Hallams said to me, do a little more and you'll go a lot further. So he worked out. We worked out together, me and him. I was 145 pounds at the time. I was one of only five people on base that can bench press 300 pounds because every day he worked with me. Okay, we played sports. I found my faith again. I got confirmed. I was on the honor guard. I did every little thing I could to give myself an edge, and it worked. And then when I was at Whiteman Air Force Base, even before that, same thing. I went to college at night, 3.5 years. I got my bachelor's degree. On the weekends, I worked at Overland Park at Embassy Suites. I would drive up from Whiteman Air Force Base on the weekends, and I would work at Embassy Suites. I'd go to college during the week at night. And during the day, I was a high-performing Air Force sergeant. And when I got out, I have a book in my garage that says burnout because I was burnt. It was done. I couldn't function because I was so burnt out. But I got a four and a half years, almost five years Air Force career, which was a good career. I won a lot of awards. I got my four-year bachelor's degree in business. And I had 3.5 years worth of hotel experience. So when I was out, I was ready, and I was on the honor guard, and I played sports, and I got religion, and I worked, you know, I was always involved. And so I've learned that do a little bit more and you go a lot further, because a lot of people see that little more, that little edge as inconvenient. I see that little edge because I'm hyper-competitive is I'm a good loser. I'm a great loser. If I lose, I lose, but I'm only a good loser because I leave it all on the playing field. And if you beat me, good. God bless you. And I, you know, I'll shake your hand. I'll give you a hug and say, I was in Vegas and I had a little time to play in a $200 tournament when I was at the Forbes event. And this gentleman, he beat me. He had a straight flush. And I gave him a high five and a hug. And it was like, no one's ever lost the tournament and give somebody else a hug. I'm a good loser, but I don't like to lose like most people, but I'm hyper, hyper competitive. And if you do a little bit more, you will go a lot further. So I learned that in the military.
That's interesting. When I was in college, I had a fraternity brother that came back from the Army Rangers basic training. And I asked him, what's the one thing you learned? He says, you can always do one more. That's what he said. You could always do one more.
When I do my keynotes, I was on a backup. I was on the match about 6 years ago at a gym, a friend of mine's gym. I'm not a fighter or anything, but we're doing something. I don't know. We're working out and we're doing some Muay Thai, and he kicked me, and I fell, and I apparently I made a noise. He was a championship Muay Thai fighter, world-class known Muay Thai fighter. He's like, in all the fights I've ever had, as he falls on the floor laughing, I've never heard a sound like that come out of another human being because I sound like a 12-year-old girl. And he hit me. I went down. I made a ridiculous sound, and I go, I can't get up. And he said, yes, you can. I go, no, I can't. He goes, raise your hand. So I'm on the floor squealing, and I raise my hand, and he goes, now raise it a little higher. And I raise it a little bit higher. He goes, now raise it 2 inches higher. And I raise it 2 inches higher. And he goes, get the hell up. And that taught me the greatest lesson. So now on every one of my keynotes, that's how I end it. I ask everybody in the audience, raise your hand. Raise it higher. Raise it 2 inches higher. And then I drop the mic and leave. And everybody gets it. Everybody gets it. You know, and one day, I've never done this, but one day I'm going to have somebody videotape that hand. Go the first time, the second time, and third time. Because if you have like 2,000-3,000 people in the audience and they do that, it's a visual that's unbelievable. And every single person, now I could talk about anything, but if I ask them, what did you get out of that? They go, when you said hands up at the end, I get it. You know, this morning I was out on the beach and I'm running and I hate running. And the guy I'm running with was like, all right, run as much as you can and then stop running. And I was running. And I was running further because I didn't want to disappoint him. And I just did a little bit more and then I gave up. So it's all that. It's just give, you know, I live by nobody cares. I live by do a little bit more and try not to complain. You know, I try not to complain, but sometimes I complain.
So aside from keynotes, aside from this in principle, you've also seen this on the ground, working day in, day out with hoteliers in the back and front of house. And I'm wondering, how do you inspire people to believe in a little bit more when you're on the ground and you're working with line cooks, midnight shift service people, night auditors? How do you inspire that in a hospitality setting?
Trust. It's got to be trust. You got to be able to say it from the top down. You know, I work with a lot of clients, and I work with one client in particular that I love more than I think I've ever loved a client. They have 50 hotels in New England, and I'm doing executive development programs with them. I wouldn't say for them, but with them, with their team. And I just love them. They're the best team. And you got to build the trust. So anybody I work with, it's especially when you're coming from television. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I was first vice president of asset management for Tishman. I've operated, I've turned around hotels, I've consulted, all that. But people are like, are you really going to get down and dirty? I'm doing a contract right now. As soon as I'm done with you, I'm going to finish the contract. And they're like, but are we going to get you? I'm like, yeah, you're going to get me. Like, but aren't you busy? I was like, everybody's busy. You know, a friend of mine goes, you know, you're hard to whack. I go, why? He goes, because you're always somewhere. But, you know, you can't look busy. You can't show the client that you're with, because it doesn't matter. If I'm there, I'm there. No one, I don't take phone calls. I do whatever you need me to do. So it's very much being disciplined, and I don't do everything. I do the things that I can do. I don't do everything. And that's another important word. No, I will not do that. I can't do it. Not because I'm better than anybody, not because I'm busy than anybody, just because I have to stay what I'm capable of doing. And if I give you my word, I've got to back up my word. If I say I'm going to be there Tuesday, I'm going to be there Tuesday. I was in a meeting, one of the owners said, hey, can you meet at 7 o'clock in Boston for breakfast? There's the only time you can meet. I said, absolutely. I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I drove to Boston just 2 weeks ago, had a meeting with him, had another meeting with somebody else on the team, and I drove back. That was 10 hours of driving for maybe 3 hours of meetings. They don't want to hear that, you know, I can't do it Tuesday or Wednesday. Thursday. You can do it 7 o'clock. I can do it 7 o'clock. I'll be there. And I love doing it. I love what I do. I love this business. You know, I was at Forbes event last week, and I'm honored to be able to give out awards and do different things for them, moderate panels. And it's one of the greatest things I do, because I never thought when I was a younger person that I'd be in the room with the best of the best of the best asking to present. So it's, it's something I love doing.
Well, we talk about the best and the best. And of course, you're up here and we've talked about inspiring other people. So I think that's a good segue to talk about your TV show coming out, Hotel All-Stars.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Of course,
yeah. I understand what you mean by I'm up here, right? And that makes sense. And I've worked really hard for my status in our business, right? But you've worked hard. Michael, you've worked hard. Everybody's worked hard. I am no higher on the ladder than anyone else. I can drop to the low rung. I can be a busboy tomorrow. I am just a person trying to prove myself every day, trying to live up to my word and trying to be authentic. That's all I am. This is all gone. When I got tapped on the shoulder with Hotel Impossible after 12 seasons, I've never really talked about this, nine seasons, over 108 shows plus extras, plus we had spinoffs. And I got tapped on the shoulder. Actually, I didn't get tapped on the shoulder. They just didn't pick up the show anymore. And my partner was upset. My friends were upset. People were crying. And I was just like, what are you doing? Like, what are you upset about? Did you not think? Like, we're only one of 200 TV shows in the history of television to go over 100 episodes. Did you not think that the Honeymoons had 32 episodes? Did you not think that one day we're going to get tapped on the shoulder? I was like, I remember being in the Sword Park the last night we were shooting in Sandusky, Ohio, as my team was having the greatest time in the world. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, how blessed am I? How lucky am I that I got to take this ride? I am the only person in the history of America to ever do a very successful hotel show because of everybody in the industry supporting me. And I said this to my production crew when I created the show with them. I said, if we do this for the hotel years, we will be on forever because there's a lot of us. And if the second I say something that I'm full of crap, they will turn off the channel. But as long as they can be sitting there, go, oh God, I wish I can say that. Oh, wait till Anthony sees this. Or wait till, once I get that, then we're in. So I'm just a busboy trying to clean a table. And I believe that. It's not just a statement. If you know me behind the scenes, if you know me, David Mullally is my best friend. If you know that about me, then you know who I am. And I'm not, you know, I'm not, listen, this could all, nobody can give a crap about me tomorrow. And we have to prove ourselves every single day. So there's, as far as I'm concerned, there's no, this guy's here, that guy's there. If you run a five-star hotel or you're a CEO of a Four Seasons or whatever, are you better than the guy that runs a different brand? No. We're all the same. We all have to support each other. All right. I ranted enough. I'm sorry.
No, but it's a very important lesson therein. And, you know, everyone has their challenges. Everyone is busy. Everyone has the stuff they have to get done. We are all, it's actually very humbling what you said in from my perspective.
Yeah, we're all here for a second, man. And we all got to be humbled and we all got to be believe in something and we all got to help each other. And, you know, the one thing where maybe I got a reputation in the industry is I don't like mediocrity. So if there's one thing that I would say that has helped me in my career is I accept mistakes, but I don't accept mediocrity. And it's so different. Everybody makes mistakes. But are you making the mistake from mediocrity or are you making the mistake from being the best? If you're making a mistake from being the best, who cares? But if you're already mediocre and you make a mistake, I'm kind of irritated.
What about mediocre without mistakes?
Yeah, but you're not going to be around the teams that I like being around. Right? I'll give you an example. If you're an accountant or you're a salesperson and you're good at that, but you don't do extra, you leave at 5 o'clock, you don't work weekends, but you're good at what you do. I love you. You're great. You're part of my team. But if you're not good at what you do and you don't do any extra, then what the hell we need you for? But if you're good at what you do and you're solid, great. So you don't have to be exceptional. You just have to do your piece. What does Bill Belichick say? Just do your job. Right? Just do your job and do it well. And then there'll be high performers, right? There's one of the things I say is out of 100 people, 70% are good, 20% suck, and 10% are superstars. But what do? We spend all of our time with the 20% of the people who suck instead of promoting them to customer and getting them out of your way. You know, do the right things, counsel them, all that, do it fair. I give people way too many chances. But once you give them the last chance, they got to go. And then the 10% just wave to them because they don't want to be bothered. They just want to be a superstar and make sure they get promoted and make sure they get their bonus and make sure they get taken care of. And then go to work on his 70% that are good but need to excel. You know, and every single person, if you're holding hands with them, I always say, hit the baby, kiss the baby, hit the baby, kiss the baby, meaning push the baby, but make sure they feel loved and cared for. And if we go over the edge together as a team, we all go over. Nobody goes over by themselves. So if you're in that mindset, I don't care if you're, you know, in the middle or at the top, you will eventually come where you need to go because you want to be on that team. And the people that don't, it's exhausting. Being on a high-performing team is exhausting. You know, I was in a meeting yesterday and somebody said, how do you keep all your energy? I go, what energy? I don't know. I get tired like everybody else, but I just love what I do, man. Yeah.
You know, your story reminds me when I was at Starwood, we came up with this award called the Starwood Weekly Award for Excellence. We called it the SWAFE Award. And every week you'd try to nominate somebody to get the award. And what invariably happened is just giving people the award for doing their job. And you know, like, no, that's not the purpose of this award. This award is going above and beyond. But there's only a certain percentage of people that do that. So you always end up giving the same award to the same people over and over again because you really don't have a lot of those excellent people.
Yeah, yeah. When awards like that happen, one of the things I say to people, whether I'm running the company or I'm consulting, is give the award when somebody bangs on their desk and goes, damn, that guy needs that award. That girl needs that award. Like, don't give it every week. Don't give it every month. Give it when somebody has an aha moment and goes, where's the award? Where's the award? I got to go give that award. That's when you give the award. Because then we're thinking about who deserves the award this week. And well, you know, she didn't get it this week and he didn't get it. He's never gotten it. And he's getting upset because he thinks, you know, it's ridiculous. So you give it when you have to jump out of your seat and run down the hall and give somebody an award. That's when you give those awards.
Makes sense.
Well, the whole idea of cultivating superstars. So you have your 10%, then you have your 70% you want to promote. And I did want to segue to promote your new show and to talk about it, Hotel All-Stars, because I believe that's sort of what it's about. So could you talk to us about where this the inception of the show and how it fits into the industry right now?
So I'm with my production company on a Zoom or something with Atlas Media, who's the production company that's done Five Star Secrets, Extreme Hotels, Hotel Impossible, and been with me since 2011. And every once in a while, they'll call me and they'll go, hey, we want to do a new show. And I'm like, no, thank you, click. I'm not interested. I don't want to do a new show. I never wanted to actually be famous. And it was never my intention to have a TV show. I got the show because I wanted it at the time because I wanted to teach the business. And I put my hand over my face, I'm going to do a show on TV. And I was blessed. And my father from above and God just came together and said, here you go. Go do it and see what happens. And when I did that, I always made an agreement that I will always teach this business. So if a kid calls me from college to get my cell numbers, so many times people are like, did he just give me cell number? He called me. Is this really Anthony? I go, if he asks me again, I'm going to hang up the phone. So my job is to teach this wonderful business, right? And so once we got the show, we went through it all. I was done. I was tired after all those years. And I loved it. It was a blessing. But, you know, how I make my living is I run RJO Hospitality. And so one day, I don't know. I really don't know. I remember Hotel Impossible where I had the epiphany. I don't know where Hotel All-Stars came from. I really don't. But I remember calling the production company. I was on the phone with them. And then we started talking about it. And I don't know if it was their idea or my idea. I don't really know how it came to be. And I was like, I want to teach people that don't know this industry exists. So if you want to be a vet or a lawyer or a doctor or a mechanic or a truck driver or a policeman, you don't say, oh, I want to be a hotel general manager. I want to be a hotel person. That's not on the list. I want to at least get it on the list. And then have you maybe do an internship. Just get on the list of, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a hotel person. And so I wanted to get people that don't know about the industry. So what we did was, it's a competition show where we bring people to really nice hotels. Three people, the first two shows we did were three people, and we put them through a competition. And the winner wins a job in the hotel, in the resort. We're going to expand that as we do more shows, and if we're fortunate enough to do more shows, where it doesn't have to be somebody that is completely a newbie to the hotel industry. It could be somebody that's in the industry that wants to continue their career and put them through some challenges. So we're going to change that a little bit because I think it's not fair to maybe somebody that's worked at the front desk if they want to be on the show and kind of get into these five-star hotels or four-star hotels. So we did Breakers, which in and of itself is not only the most beautiful hotel, but you could imagine I had to call in some favors because they're not interested in doing television shows at their resort. And Paul and his team were very kind. Paul was like, yeah, I'll do it, but my team won't. And then after a period of time, we were fortunate enough for them to be convinced. And we were, my team's, we've been to 50 countries, 48 states. We've gone to the best hotels in the world for five-star secrets. So we know how to act. My team knows how to act, right? So we assured them, Paul trusted me, great show. Then we called Tamara at Margaritaville, the chief marketing and sales officer, who's a friend of mine. I said, what do you think? She said, I'm in. So we did the shows, we put them in a can. But the first call after we decided that we wanted to do the show was not to Netflix or not to Viacom. It was to Chip Rogers, AHLA. I said, Chip, I have this idea. I want it to be funded by the hotel industry for the hotel industry. I don't want it to be the way it used to be. Because one, that world is different than when I started in 2011, 2012. And I want, like, let's all of us, including you two, all of us support the show. Let us support it. Why do we need an outside entity? Because the show's on all these years because all of us watched it. Right? Well, all of us watched it. That's why the show lasted so long. So let's fund it this way. And Chip said something I wasn't expecting. He said, yes. And I was like, I got off the phone and I was just like, wow, did he just say yes? That was cool. And then after a couple of months and lawyers and stuff, they did it, right? And nobody made any money. If it wasn't a money thing, it's Chip just wants to, and AHLA's job is to get people in the industry. That's their job. That's their mission. So now our job is, and you probably saw a lot of the social media, our job is to get everyone to watch it. So I'm asking you and everybody else you know, get people to watch it when it drops. It's going to drop. We're going to do middle of March, but now we're going to do the end of March. The first show is going to be Margaritaville. It's going to drop on YouTube for free. And the reason it's free is because Chip and AHLA funded it. All they want is eyeballs. So it's very rare that you don't need a return on your investment. We'd like to get them a return on investment and pay it in full, but the mission is to get people in the industry. I think it's fun. It's a nice show. As we go forward, we're going to edit it a little bit as far as how we do it. But it's the show I've always wanted to do. And I remember sitting in the morning watching my crew, my old crew, because I wouldn't do it unless my old crew came back. So my camera guy, who John Kellerman, who does, if you ever watch Feeding Phil, he's his camera guy. He's the best in the business. Then my friend Alex, who's a producer, and just everybody, Dana, and everybody just came back. And Enrique, our sound guy, award-winning guy. And as soon as I saw them, I started crying. Nobody knows I cried. I went to cry. I cry a lot. And I cried. And I was like, I can't believe that I'm doing this again. Like, this is not what I expected or wanted, but it came to fruition. And it was, it was unbelievable. So I was very blessed to do it. And hopefully people support it.
Just for reference, we are recording today on March 8th. And the first episodes, they come out again. When do they come out?
March. Margaritaville will come out March, probably April 1st, April 2nd. And then Breakers will come out probably in May.
Okay, perfect. So, and what is the actual promotion vehicle, the on-ramp to get people onto YouTube to watch the episodes?
Social media, the hell out of this thing. All of my channels, Hotel All-Star. We just hired a publicist yesterday. Or the media company hired a publicist yesterday, getting me on talk shows, getting me on podcasts, just getting the word out. If everybody, including you guys, talk about it, and AHLA talks about it, Margaritaville and Breakers, they have major mailing lists. If we watch it, if nobody else outside of our industry watches it but us, and then we send it to a friend whose kid's going to college or whatever, that's the purpose of this. We are, millions strong. So we can support this within our organization.
Well, it raises such an important issue that you mentioned briefly, which is making the senior roles at a hotel aspirational. People are going, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a firefighter. When I grow up, I want to be a doctor, et cetera, et cetera. And this, in a lot of ways, is part of a cluster of solutions that dare I use the term, they have to come in order to make the role of GM and others associated with that. They have to be aspirational on the same level as where other industries and other professions are. So
I love what you said. And like, because people say, I don't want to be at the front desk. I don't want to work in healthcare. I don't work for food and beverage. I want to be the GM. I remember when I was a kid right before the military, I wanted to be a cop, but I didn't want to be a cop. I wanted to be a detective. And I called my local precinct, 61st Precinct in Brooklyn. And I got the desk sergeant, I guess. And I said, how do I become a detective? And he goes, well, you have to become a police officer first. I said, I don't want to be a police officer. I want to be a detective. I'm really good at being a detective. And he goes, you have to be a cop first. I go, I don't want to be a cop. I want to be a detective. And then obviously he laughed at me and hung up the phone. And then I went in the military. So you can't be a detective before you're a cop. You can't be a GM before you know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And so I never really thought about that until you just said it. But yeah, so you want to become – listen, I want to be Brian, the CEO of Wynn, right? Brian's a friend of mine, and I want to be him, right? Like, that's the greatest job in the world as far as I'm concerned. North America CEO of Wynn, great, great company. And so you got to start somewhere. You got to come into the business, but you have to want to do it. How many kids go to medical school and break? If you want to do it and you see yourself in the operating room or you see yourself talking to a client, you're there already. Oh, yeah, this other stuff is just, you just got to do it. You got to work 18 hours a day. You got to not eat for a week. You got to do whatever you got to do to become a doctor. Whatever you got to do, you got to do. So that's how I saw it. When I first came out of the military and I looked at the skyline and I said, I want everybody in New York City to know my name. I want to be in the industry and I want to be the first people call if they want to run a hotel. I didn't know anything. Little did I know, I'd be in Spain and a taxi cab driver pulls over and goes, oh my God, you're in my car. Little did I know people would know my name to that extreme, but I had a goal. My goal was people will know my name in New York City. I did that relatively young. And then all of a sudden it happened, you know, the show and everything. But you have to put it there and then work towards that goal without thinking about the goal. This is important. This is really important. We talk about manifesting. I was manifesting before I knew what the hell the word meant. You just say, that's where I'm going. And where do I start? Okay. And then you forget that that's the goal. You have to forget the goal. You have to forget it. You have to work every day that's in front of you. You have to take the right jobs. You have to talk to the right people. And then when you're right near that goal, you're like, oh, there's the goal. If you're constantly chasing it and you're constantly thinking about it, you'll never get there because it's exhausting because you'll see how far you're away. Like, man, that's far. If you just do today better than anybody else that can come close to you, I always say when I took over a hotel, you know, I will be friends with everybody in my comm set, but, you know, good luck to you all. Because I ain't coming to be number one, number two. I remember calling, I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent. I remember calling the principal of my daughter's school and I congratulated him for being the fifth. I texted him in the morning. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. I texted him and go, congratulations. He was the fifth best public school in New York City. I said, congratulations. I'll never forget his text back. He goes, I don't wake up in the morning to be number five. I have hundreds of schools, right? So that's how I feel. It's like, I don't wake up to be, you know, number five.
But do you think a lot of what you shared is generational? Like, I think a lot of the, like you say, you know, you hold up, said, I don't want to be a cop. I want to be a detective. But I think a lot of this younger generation now where it's instant gratification, this also to achieve the career is almost like delayed gratification. So how do you coach these kids to realize it takes time to get to where you want? I know you just kind of communicated that, but how do you get them to realize it's just not instant? Where everything right now in their life is instant.
I think we all get kicked, right? So the first time they get kicked, they'll start seeing that. In our generation, in my generation, I'll say, because I don't know how old you are, Michael, but when there were people that were not good, and there were people that were great, and there were people in the middle. Right now, there are people that are great, that are young, and people that are mediocre, and people that aren't, right? And if you do a little more, you go a lot further. And I don't think, maybe percentage-wise, it's a little bit more difficult now. So I'll give you that. But I don't think it's as extreme as people think. I talk to young people all the time, okay? I have three children, okay, from 21 to 25. I have twins that are 25 or 24 and my baby's 21. And they work hard. My daughter started at 16 as a dishwasher in a bakery. My other daughter right now has got, she's a theater teacher. She got a master's degree. She works on the weekends in the theater. My other daughter had two ACL surgeries and never gave up and finally played this year as a volleyball player. My other daughter, you know, works really, really hard. She works from home. Matter of fact, she just came in and went back upstairs. She works from home 2 days a week, Mondays and Fridays, and she's an event planner. And it works for her. She doesn't want to work 5 days a week from an office. Okay, it works for her. It's really important that you understand that the flexibility they're asking for and the way they want to work, we would have loved that. When I was 20 years old, I would have loved being able to work from home on a Friday. I would have loved to be able to tell my boss, I don't really like the way you're talking to me right now. So why don't you take a chill pill? You know, when one of my executives threatened to put a pole up my, you know what, if I made that mistake again, I would have loved, and I said something to him because I've always had a little bit of an edge. And I said something to him respectfully, but I said something. Most people wouldn't have. So we all want that ability to stand up for ourselves, to be flexible, to work on our own terms, okay? All of us. Right now, we're all working on our own terms, right? You know, this morning, I was running on the beach. Then I had some meetings. I have a contract due. I can do this from the comfort of my home. And then I can either close shop at 5 o'clock or work till 12 o'clock tonight. It's on me. So I think that the younger generation get a bad rap. In one way, they deserve it. But just like our generation, the people that didn't want to be successful deserved it. They want the trophy, but they don't want to do the work, right? The trophy doesn't come when you run the race. The trophy comes in practice. So to me, there are so many kids that I'm around that are so, so good. And there are so many kids that I know, a couple come to mind, it's like, eh, good luck. You talk a good game. So I just think it's up to us to hold them accountable. So when they are being that person that's not willing to do the extra work, hold them accountable. Meaning, like, I mentor kids, and there's some kids I don't call back. because I actually, there was one kid that called me up a couple years ago, and he was whining. I mean, whining, like on the frigging thing. Can't get the break, can't get this, get that. Just do me a favor. I said, just like this. I said, put a little stone in your shoe. Put a little rock, just a little one, a little stone. Find it somewhere in the concrete. Put it in your shoe, walk around with it for a week, and then call me back. Didn't call me back for like a year. Emails me through LinkedIn and said, I got the lesson. Thank you. That was it. Never called me again. Never called me again. It's like we all get too comfortable and we all complain and we all whine and we all worry about our challenges. I have challenges every day. We all have challenges. But if the worst thing you can do is be comfortable for too long. That's the worst thing. When you're really rocking and you're killing it and you're above everyone and like, man, you know you're making more money and you know you're getting this and you're getting that and everything's smooth. And I've been there. Like, you start to lose perspective. And then when you get punched in the face a little bit, you're like, ah, oh, that felt better. It's like, what do you mean it felt better? I'm talking to myself now. Like, what do you mean that felt better? It's like, ah, I forgot what it was like to struggle a little bit. So we all need the rock in the shoe, because if you don't have a faith, if you don't have understanding, if you don't have gratefulness, I always say you can't have a bad day if you live a grateful life. If you don't have that, everything else is crap, man. So when you're doing great, you're mean to people. And when you're doing shitty, you're mean to people. You know, it's like you've got to be a person that wants to bring everybody with you.
That is the best way to finish off this episode here, Anthony. So many lessons, and as you pointed out, these lessons transcend generations. They apply throughout. And I really hope people will listen to this once, they'll listen to it twice, they'll really digest what you said. And of course, to everyone listening, please check out Hotel All Stars so we can really make this show an ongoing success and really promote what it takes to become a true hospitality leader. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Gain Momentum Podcast. To stay up to date, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Gain Advisors, head to gainadvisors.com.